So this past week, October 26th, actually, a U.S. District Judge, Myron Thompson, ruled two laws unconstitutional down here in Alabama. Last year, in 2016, the Alabama legislature passed two laws that were attempting to limit abortion access. One of the laws would ban the procedure that is normally used in second trimester abortions, the D&E dilation and evacuation procedure, which would essentially cut, you know, just that would essentially get rid of all second trimester abortions because it's getting rid of the procedure. And then the other one would prohibit the state from licensing or renewing the license of any abortion clinic that was within 2,000 feet of a K-8 public school. I don't know why 2,000 feet, but those are the two laws that the legislature passed last year. And then, and like we said last week, a district judge struck them down as unconstitutional, and that should not surprise anybody. There are a lot of people that are angry and outraged about this issue, but it shouldn't surprise anyone because regardless of what your personal feelings about abortion are, whatever our personal feelings about abortion may be, the ethical, moral beliefs we have about it, the very stark reality is that the law and the Constitution, whether we like it or not, are on the side of abortion. So despite a small amount of latitude that states have to regulate abortion, we see this exact scenario play out time and time and time and time again. You have this usually Republican-heavy state government that will pass laws restricting abortion, someone sues, and then the courts almost always strike the law down. And I bring this up because it is a cycle. It is a cycle because what's going to happen now is next year during the midterms, and then in 2020, all these Republicans running for re-election at some point in their campaign are going to point back to this very scenario, and they're going to talk about abortion lobbies, and they're going to talk about these baby-hating Democrats and these horrible abortion supporters, and they're going to get re-elected, and then they're going to repeat this entire process over again. And so, Rebecca, I wanted to start this episode of the co-op this way because even though you know, the new pro-life movement focuses on a range of issues, abortion is still probably our most debated and talked about subject. And we run into plenty of detractors who tend to take offense to our focus on demand over supply. And so I bring it up because I bring examples like what we have here in Alabama to sort of illustrate our approach and explain why we've, you know, lost so much faith in the old pro-life movement to begin with. You know, I'll admit that I'm even pretty cynical about the whole thing because I don't believe that the people passing these laws that get struck down are not aware of exactly what's going to happen as they're crafting the legislation. Mm-hmm. You know, these are politicians who have been in the game for a really long time, and they know what's going to happen. And like I said, it's a cycle, and that's part of the reason why we believe the way that we do, why we take the approach that we take.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of two ways of looking at the legislation side, and one is from an ideological standpoint, do you want to live in a civilization the laws of which reflect a respect for life? And of course we want that. Mm. Yes. And we can imagine, you know, our utopian scenario in which we have all of these perfect laws set up, and, you know, philosopher kings would get in there and do that. But the reality is that that's not where we are right now. So are we going to work to create the utopian civilization which has all of the correct laws, or are we going to work kind of, you know, edging through the laws that we have in order to protect life? Mm-hmm. Now, some people would say, well, you know, why would you give up? Why not both? And yes, exactly. The problem is that after 40 years, what's happening is all of the effort is being put into, you know, the occasional putting forth of these laws. And it's not even like they're putting forth this grandiose pro-life utopia, because at the same time they're enacting anti-life legislation. But, you know, you can't even say that these laws are in themselves sufficient to bring about our pro-life utopia. And they're obviously not going to get passed. So what if we were to kind of reverse the direction, and instead of saying, you know, laws first, behavior later, work on the realm of action? What is it that people are actually doing in reality? And if we can look at why they're doing what they're doing, if we can look at changing the preconditions that need to be changed, then perhaps the laws will follow through. Although, you know, you and I have both spoken before about how we are realists. You know, mm-hmm. So, for instance, when we're talking about sexual assault, we know sexual assault is never going to go away.
Right.
And it's funny because we can, if we're talking about, like, you know, rape, with right-wingers, they'll usually say, well, there's nothing you're going to be able to do to stop this because, you know, men are whatever by nature, and, you know, you can't be so utopian. You think you're ever going to have a world without rape. And mm-hmm. I'm saying, no, I don't. But I'd sure like to see far fewer, and the same goes for abortion.
Right.
You know, let's look at what we can do on both of these. So, yeah, I see that. I see that kind of cycle you're talking about.
Well, we've
absolutely
mentioned before about how, you know, how this is a reoccurring theme in history. Like, the concept of abortion has been around for millennia, and
oh, yeah.
and it's because it's perceived as a need. And I mean, I don't in any part of me think that abortion is a necessary thing, but it is perceived that way by many, many, many people. Mm-hmm. It's in the public consciousness that mm-hmm. abortion is in some point a need. And that right there is going to always be the biggest hindrance to any, you know, anti-abortion
right.
legislation. Because, I mean, that's why the law, that's why Roe versus Wade was settled in the first place. I mean, it's perceived, like I said, it's perceived as something that is a need. And so when you recognize that's the way that, you know, even people who wouldn't have an abortion themselves, who are, you know, semi-pro-life or semi-anti-abortion, you know, even they are going to admit that they can see how it could be seen that way, or how it could be, you know, seen as a need. And so when we talk about,
right,
you know,
right.
not focusing on supply so much, that's part of because we recognize this very, like we said earlier, it's a very just real reality for what this is. We have to look at the world as it is. And we have to be aware of the complexity of this issue, because it is very complex. And we have to work with that to move towards a solution. And it's funny because this is right. not a radical concept. I mean, this is the kind of idea that pops up in business all the time, in any other parts of our lives. You know, when we're looking at an issue, when we're looking at a problem, we always tend to go towards the root cause. You know, just in our everyday lives, mm-hmm. what's causing this issue? It's hot in my house. Why is it hot in my house? Well, it's because my air conditioner is broken. Why is my air conditioning broken? You know, but we don't do that with abortion or with a lot of issues regarding sexual ethics, actually. You know, and honestly, I think I would be more okay with the, you know, sort of like the old pro-life movement folks that we've broken away from. I'd be more okay with them if they weren't mm-hmm. If the mainstream pro-life movement wasn't such a shill for the Republican Party. If it was, you know,
right.
If it wasn't like that, I would be a lot more okay with it. And actually, something I've thought about the other day is we really need, despite what, you know, the new pro-life movement is looking at, and despite what our focus is, we really need more of these non-Republican, non-conforming, alternative, supply-side pro-life organizations, because I think that's going to be
right.
the real catalyst to save the movement. I don't think that new pro-life movement is really going to save everything all at once. I think it's going to require a lot of effort, but we can work. You know, you have organizations like Secular Pro-Life and New Way Feminist and Rehumanize International, mm-hmm. all of who have a supply-side portion to their belief system. We can work with, you know, with movements like that. We can work with those people. We can do good work with them. You can't do work with a pro-life movement that is Republican before they're pro-life, you know?
Oh, yeah, and it's funny because I look at an organization like Rehumanize International, and they kind of they're perfect because, first of all, they're very better than I am about being nice to people in the old for life movement. And they have the consistent life ethic, and they have, they don't have the same kind of radical criticisms that we're making. And yet, just a couple of weeks ago, I saw this obnoxious and poorly written, of course, article attacking not only us, but them. And I was like, that's weird. I mean, it's normal to attack me. I'm not likable.
Right.
Matthew, you're likable, but you're abrasive. But, you know, Amy Murphy, who runs Rehumanize, is like the most likable person in the world. If you're attacking her, there's
really
something
is.
Wrong.
Absolutely.
And that right there, I was like, okay, you guys have just totally jumped the shark. You are attacking the wrong mm-hmm. people. And that's why I no longer hesitate in saying, no, those are not people I want to work with. Those far-right, fundamentalist, misogynistic, Republican all the way, so-called pro-lifers, people will say, well, you know, don't you want to reach out to them? I'm like, no, I don't want to reach out to them because mm-hmm. I think that they're sexist to the core. I think they don't want a woman-centric pro-life movement. Mm-hmm. They don't want to consider the possibility that women may choose abortion because they're in difficult situations. Whereas these many other organizations, as well as many of the crisis pregnancy centers and medical clinics and all of these other groups that do genuine good work, you know, they're trying to look at the supply side, and they're, you know, willing to work with the kind of the old guard, but they're also very focused on the needs of the women mm-hmm. and what's actually going on there, kind of in the trenches. So I do make a distinction, and if people want to get angry at me for that, then go ahead, write another poorly written article, have fun.
I don't know, I think it's funny that with the Republican Party being so closely tied to the modern pro-life movement, and just another one of those things that we kind of point at all the time is that these people have, in every decade since Roe versus Wade was settled, these people have had either a Republican president or a Republican majority in Congress or both at the same time mm-hmm. at least once in mm-hmm. every decade. They've
right.
had so many opportunities to do something about this, to address this issue, to overturn yeah. these laws that they keep saying they're going to do, but you know it never works out that way. And like I said, it's easy to get it's easy to get kind of cynical about that because I think part of the reason why we can be as, I don't know about aggressive, but just as critical as we usually are, and more so than some of the people at these other organizations is because it's I know, it's just always rubbed me the wrong way. It feels like it's something that should be so obvious to people. It was one of the things that really pushed me away from the conservative side of things in the first place is that, nothing's actually getting done about this entire issue. And they keep saying, we're going to do something about
nothing,
it. And they never,
no.
nothing ever, gets done about it. And so it's, and it frustrates me that it's so hard for people to kind of grasp that concept and to kind of see that for what it is.
Right. And then they say, this time is going to be it. This time is going to be it. And I'm like, why would this time be any different? Especially because what we now have is a whole demographic of people who aren't passionately pro-choice at all. Mm-hmm. People who don't think abortion is good, who love babies, who many would have children of their own and would like to have more children or would like to have children someday. Mm-hmm. They're not, these supposed aggressive feminazi women now trying to be men. And yet they are very wary of the term pro-life because mm-hmm. They associate it with people like Donald Trump or these televangelists or, radical religious communities in which women are shamed for being pregnant. Mm-hmm. And I think that they have reason to feel that way. I can't turn around and say, oh, how dare you stereotype pro-lifers when right. look at who's in the White House.
Absolutely.
Look at, you know, even a number of people who I have unfortunately been obliged to work with in the past who were openly misogynistic, you know, mm-hmm. Incapable of seeing why the Women's March might be happening, why women might really not like having a president who brags about sexual assault.
Right.
So with all of that on the table, I'm very sympathetic towards these kind of moderate middle-of-the-road mm-hmm. people who don't like abortion but are running in the opposite direction when they hear the word pro-life. So what we get then is a much harder pushback. Anytime pro-life legislation comes up, people are pushing back against it harder and harder because the old movement has consistently said, yes, we care about women, and then consistently proven that they don't with the people they elect, the legislation they elect, the conversations exactly. overheard, the abortions coerced and secret. Yeah.
Well, I think you lose a lot of credibility, too, when you refuse to acknowledge, you know, reality in so many ways. And again, that's something that the old pro-life mm-hmm. movement, when you really get down to it, when you start to talk about these issues of, you know, well, you know, not everyone who has an abortion is evil. This is something that's perceived as a need. This is something that's been going on for millennia. This is something that, you know, Republicans are fixing. You know, when you really get down and just sort of break down all these very realistic things, they just ignore them. Or at the end of the day, or you get to the point where they'll, you know, again, it comes back to an issue of sexual ethics that eventually you'll get to the point of people saying, well, you know, if they do this, if they're out there, you know, having sex or you know, having sex outside of wedlock or whatever they're doing, if they're doing all that kind of stuff, you know, mm-hmm. then they're doing it wrong in the first place. They're sinning in the first place. And suddenly it becomes this issue
right.
of morality, and you can't, you know, it
right.
just doesn't really work with the reality that we're dealing with. This is the same issue that my mother-in-law worked at the AIDS clinic in our town, and you know, it was the same issue, you know, in the 80s, trying to get people to pay attention to this issue that was, you know, it was primarily at the time, or at least known to be, affecting only or the majority of the gay community, and it was mm-hmm. hard to get people to pay attention because, well, they're the gays and they're just sinning anyways,
right.
and you know, if maybe if they weren't sinning so much, this wouldn't be an issue. But you can't do that. You can't look at things like that. And we have a very similar situation,
yeah.
you know, especially with the old pro-life movement, and it's very prevalent among, you know, many from that era, is that it's, you can't police these yeah. sexual ethics like this. If you really care about saving children, then you've got to accept the fact that you're not going to be able to stop people from having sex. You're not going to be able to stop people from being in crisis issues. You've just got to respond to that. You've got to be able to respond to those things and, you know, equip people to make good decisions and try to lessen the amount of crisis pregnancies, and you're going to make a much more significant impact on abortion.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, picking up on this whole kind of sin thing, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could get people to stop sinning?
Right.
And one of the reasons I'm Catholic is that I like the what some people consider to be a deep pessimism in our recognition of original sin. Mm-hmm. And there's some theologians who, you know, they don't want to talk about original sin. They want to talk about original blessing. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, look at history. We have these supposedly rational creatures, us, who have just mm-hmm. consistently done horrible things over and over and over again for no good reason.
I know.
No good reason at all. And, you know, why? Sin is it doesn't make any sense. And actually, that's almost part of the theology of it, is that, like in Dante's Divine Comedy, these are the ones who have lost the good of the intellect. Sin makes you stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to make that go away. That's why we believe in Jesus. So if you think that you're going to institute some, like, I don't know, little Bible study or prayer group or ministry or apostolate that's going to make sin go away, then that's kind of pathetic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they, you know, like, we can look at, like, Pope Francis talking about the environment, talks about the way sin affects the environment, and so we can see that, yes, like, our destruction of the environment, our bad relation to our ecosystems, this is sinful, mm-hmm. but we're not just going to sit back and be like, ah, sin. If only we could stop sinning. You know, we need to be recycling, and we need to be looking at alternative energy sources. And the same goes for this whole world of sex ethics. Something I wanted to go back to something you mentioned earlier, though, if I may. We've been kind of like lambasting the old pro-life movement quite a bit, and. Mm-hmm. and I'm not going to apologize for that. I think
that's
you are
a good
either.
Reason.
yeah. But, you know, people could say, well, what, you know, are you going to get all cozy with the pro-choicers now? And some pro-choicers I can definitely get cozy with. The ones who say we should work on finding resources to help women so they don't have to have abortions.
Right.
I'm like, cool. I'm with you on that. But there are other people out there who are saying we need to keep abortion available. I think it was a tweet from Cecile Richards was talking about how we need to... She was talking about contraception, actually, contraception being good for the workplace. That's a totally different issue. But I was looking at that and saying, well, yeah, abortion is good for the workplace, too. And a lot of people who are promoting abortion do so with this very capitalist mentality, like, mm-hmm. you know, women should be allowed to go get abortions so they can continue to be productive in the workplace mm-hmm. for their employers, for the economy. And so once again, we have, like, the woman herself is just deleted from the situation. Like, the woman is important as long as she's a productive member of society mm-hmm. Without any consideration of the fact that she might choose to have a baby.
Right.
So, like, those pro-choicers are no more pro-choice than the old fundamentalist pro-lifers are pro-life, I would say.
Yeah.
So there, we can attack pro-choicers, too.
Yeah. Oh, and don't get me wrong. There are plenty of pro-choicers that drive me insane because, I personally find that if you want to just break it down to a simple issue of, you know, ethics, I mean, if we're going to talk ideologically speaking here, I think that the pro-life movement has a much, much, much stronger argument. And that's why I'm pro-life to begin with, because I do believe that abortion is itself, the act itself, is a horrible thing that shouldn't be an option and it shouldn't be around.
Right.
But, you know, and that is actually something that I wanted to bring up, too, is that we still have to, when it comes to focusing on demand side with our approach to abortion, that doesn't mean that anybody should ever be quiet about the issue of abortion to begin with. We still have to mm-hmm. educate people about why abortion is wrong, and we still have to do the best we can to raise generations of people who grow up with a natural respect for life and understand that abortion can't be an option because it absolutely robs a human being of their right to life. Like we said earlier, it's in the public consciousness that's not the truth. It is in the majority of people's brains that's not the truth. And so that doesn't make it right. That doesn't make abortion right. It just means we have to adjust our strategy and accept the reality for what it is and approach it in a different manner.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because there are areas in life ethics where it seems to me like it's really in your face obvious that something is wrong, like slavery. Like, you know, here's a woman in front of you screaming, you know, don't separate me from my baby, and mm-hmm. you're going to take her baby away and sell the baby, and then you're going to sell her to someone else. That's like, this is not like, oh, people didn't know any better back then. That's people really just choosing to ignore what's right in front of them. But I do think that when it comes to, like, you know, early term abortions, it's a lot harder for people to see that because they're saying, well, you know, it's an organism, but it's not a person yet. It's an organism, it's human, but it doesn't have rights yet. And I can see why people would say that, and that's one reason why I feel like we need to move towards a much more radical defense of life, not just human life, but let's look at life itself. Now, right. You're a vegetarian, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, yeah. And I'm working on getting there. I only eat, ethically raised meat. I'm a vegetarian if I go out anywhere. But sure. I do think when I was at the Consistent Life Conference recently, it was amazing how many of the people I spoke to there were not only vegetarian but vegan. Mm-hmm. And I felt like kind of the moral slob because
right.
I occasionally eat meat. And when you think about it that way, coming at it from that perspective, well, there's an animal. No, it's not a person. Yeah, maybe it's okay to kill it sometimes, but is it really necessary to kill it now? Is it
right.
necessary to kill it this way? Is it justified to kill it just because I like meat? It seems like we need to have a very strong justification for harming an animal.
Sure.
And when we look at it that way, I think even if we're looking at the embryo as not yet a person, we can see this is a living being that deserves some kind of protection.
Right.
And we're not saying we'll only protect this being and, you know, screw everything else. We're saying let's be radically pro-life across mm-hmm. the board.
One thing I want to discuss before we run out of time too is you posted an article today because I want to go back to kind of crapping on the old pro-life movement for a bit because this is this is definitely something that. That you see a lot of, and it's, you know, one of our biggest criticisms about the overall life movement in the past has been that you can't seem to ever address any other issue other than abortion, mm-hmm. even if the issues might be related. And so when we're talking about issues of racism, you always tend to have these people who, whenever you want to mention issues of racism, you have this pro-life people who just pipe up and say, yeah, well, you know, what about abortion? It's the biggest racist problem in the world, but you Democrats and people support that too. And wasn't that the article that you posted today kind of about that whole problem?
So, yes, this article, I think it was Charlie Camosi was interviewing Cecily Smith, who I heard speak recently, and she's talking about going at the root causes, that you can't talk about abortion being a huge problem in the Black community if you're not looking at why that is. And when you look at why that is, you have to acknowledge systemic and structural and even personal racism that women are encountering across the board, but especially when they go in for medical care. So, To talk about, abortion, racism, the Democrats are pushing abortion on the Black community, that actually kind of is a derogatory way of talking about the Black community, as though they're just helplessly out there choosing abortion because the Democrats made it available.
Right.
And that actually goes along with a mistaken idea about supply anyway. Like, oh,
right.
it's there, let's go get it.
Right, exactly.
So I think that's actually a racist way of talking about abortion in the Black community. And the article was being nicer than I am about that. But saying that if you're going to address the issue of abortion and racism without addressing root causes, you're not really going to get a good listen.
You know that you have to, like you said, if you want to get someone to actually listen to you, you're going to have to talk about these root issues in the first place. And I have always, like I said earlier, too, I've always felt like it's a deflection too, because that, you know, that is an issue. Because in order to recognize that issue, you have to recognize the fact that systemic racism exists. It's all, you know, it all kind of connects to each other. And, to recognize that, you have to recognize that systemic racism exists in the first place. And that is something that a lot of white people just in general don't want to accept. And so it's another good way for, mostly white pro-lifers to deflect from having to talk about that issue of racism. Well, until we do something about abortion, we're not even going to talk about any of these other issues because this is obviously the worst issue impacting the Black community. I'm the pro-life white guy, I should know, so let's you just shut up. I mean, that's the, right. that's, to me, that's always kind of been the underlying message that you get with that kind of talk.
I've seen that so much lately. And yeah, there is this strong sense of white privilege and of male privilege in that, you know, here comes the educated white guy who's going to like flounce in and inform this poor black woman of you know, what she's been doing wrong,
right.
and is not going to listen to her, is not going to listen when she says racism is real, is going to laugh it off. Oh. So, yeah, like you said, you know, we've got to deal, you said, they say we have to deal with abortion before we can deal with racism, but I mm-hmm. think the reality is perhaps the other way around.
Yeah.
And that, to kind of connect that back with what you were talking about at the beginning of the program about this legislation, you know, they try to enact this legislation, it's obviously not going to be passed, and then afterwards they can say, look at these evil pro-choicers, look at these evil women. And so it feeds into this way in which some pro-lifers tend to talk about the abortion issue at all. Like, one that drives me crazy is when they talk about abortion-minded women.
Mm-hmm.
Like, being abortion-minded, as though the problem there is really in her mind.
Right.
And if you could just get her to see that it's a baby, you know, changing minds and hearts. I think actually a lot of women have a strong suspicion that it's a baby, and they have to kind of block that out because they're looking at a scenario in which they have living children they have to feed. This is their only viable option, mm-hmm. as far as they can see. So, mm-hmm. you know, instead of changing her mind, we need to change the circumstances that she lives in. So I feel like it's just using that term, abortion-minded, in itself suggests that this is like a problem that has erupted from the minds of feminists. and so, yeah, again, we need a white guy to come.
But no, it's you know, it's
I'm true. A white girl, so you know.
There you go. And so to kind of end on that too, because that's so when it comes to these issues of, you know, approaching the demand side of things, that does tend to a lot of what we support is usually issues and policies and legislation that is usually more supported by, you know, liberals and Democrats and left-leaning individuals like that. It's usually social programs that more people to the left support, and so that's why another reason why we end up doing a lot of our work you know, on this side and connecting with more people who are more on the left side, because they have the you know, they agree with us from the demand perspective, but they're also the people who are most likely to support, or at least publicly support, abortion rights and abortion access. And so next week, we're going to have someone on. His name is Christopher Hale. He's going to be joining us. He's the former executive director of Catholics and Alliance for the Common Good, and he is a Democrat. He's a pro-life Democrat, and he's done a lot of work in the party regarding abortion, and his specialty is party issues in politics and the abortion issue, and working and, you know, really, you know, hands-on, real-life experience with working with these in this sort of very complex area of demand side and understanding the reality of the public consciousness and all the stuff we've been talking about today. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be next week.
That's going to be great.
So that'll be our first guest, our first time having a guest on the show, and certainly hopefully not the last. So, as always, thank you so much for listening, and a lot of fun talking about abortion for an hour this time. But
so much fun.
that's what it's about. So, anyway, so thank you so much for tuning in. Please remember, if you can, to become a subscriber. $9.99 a month helps us grow this platform, and we do have swag made now. We do have decals, so. We're going to start trying to send out decals to people who are subscribing to the show. So that would be awesome. So thanks so much. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Peace.